When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
And this prefect would be this kid, your same age, who would stand in the front of the class and write down the names of the kids who were talking. And he or she would present that list to this man.
Sounds like something Meenal would do.
Something Meenal would do, yeah. Yeah, Meenal is definitely like prefect material.
Meenal would get Ankita and Shane in trouble all the time.
Yeah, and Ankita was like this big chatterbox, so she was definitely getting into trouble.
Welcome to episode 5 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. This is part 2 of our education series. I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And today we will talk about our different experiences in school and the disparity in the education systems in India and in Europe. And this episode is really just a food for thought about what education really is about and how we perceive it and how we can divide what we learn in school and what we learn at home. Now, Ankita went to school in India and I would really like to know, I mean, I have cousins in India, I have family in India, and I know more or less what it's like. I know how rigorous it can be and how difficult it can be. But Ankita, I'd like to hear it from you yourself, because now you're in Europe and you've seen what it's like. So maybe you might have a much clearer picture of what you experienced in India. So what was school like for you in India back in the early 2000s?
So when I think of school itself, Meenal, the first memory that comes to mind for some reason, I don't even know why, is the art class.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we had a compulsory art class. So my earliest memories of school are basically from, I think, fifth grade onwards, because everything that happened before that, I don't really remember classes. I don't remember how we were taught. Nothing of that, you know, was important because I went to school to play with my friends. But pretty much from the fifth grade onwards, when people start telling you that, oh, this is serious, what you're doing, you're studying, you know, your tables, your this and that, you need to pay attention. That is what I remember the most. So from fifth grade to seventh grade, I think we had this compulsory art class. I don't even know why this comes to mind, but this was basically a class where this teacher would just come to class. It was a man. He would come to class and he would ask us to take out our art books, our compulsory art books that come with, you know, the whole school set. And this mm-hmm. book had a color image on one side and a blank page on the other. What we had to do was copy the image, you know, from just replicate the image on the blank side.
Yeah.
And color within the lines. This, I don't know how much of that is art, really. I don't know if anyone's more creative because of that. Yeah, I really don't see the point. And it was a compulsory art class because, oh, we're a school where we encourage students to study art and extracurricular activities. The worst thing is this teacher would come to class and ask who all forgot to bring their art books or who all didn't have their art books with them. And
let me guess, you were one of those.
Yes. So if you don't have your art book, he would beat you on your hand with a steel ruler.
With a steel, and that was okay?
It was a thing. It was his signature move. He would come into class and say, who doesn't have an art book? And whoever, you know, forgot to bring the art book, they would get a beating with a steel ruler. So let me explain this to you. There were these three kinds of students, okay?
Yeah.
Let's call the first student Shane.
Okay.
Let's just call the student. This is not inspired from real events or anything.
You know when you have those movies where it says any characters are just pure coincidence.
Yeah, yeah.
We can have that here as well.
Yeah. This is pure coincidence. So let's just call this character, the student Shane. So Shane comes to class and Shane forgets forgets about his art book because Shane only has one rough notebook in his bag and he doesn't really care. He doesn't look at the timetable. He doesn't give a shit, right? This kid comes to class, doesn't have an art book. The art sir says, extend your hand. Let me beat you with my steel ruler. He gets the beating and he's asked to leave the class. And Shane just leaves the class and he's happy because, you know, now he doesn't have to sit through the art class. Okay? The second student, let's just call her Ankita. Okay.
Once again, pure coincidence.
Pure coincidence. So Ankita also doesn't give a shit about this because she, you know, at that young age, she's wise and she knows that.
Wait, can I ask you, did Shane influence Ankita?
No, Shane and Ankita never mutually exclusive. They never used to talk in class and they didn't even know that, you know, they existed. Ankita comes to class. Ankita is wise. And Ankita knows that this art class is rubbish because copying something onto a blank page is not going to help her become more creative in the future. So she doesn't bring her art book because she really does not give a shit. So when it's the art class, because she's tiny as well. This Ankita we're talking about is tiny. Okay, she sneaks her way out of class.
I mean, I couldn't imagine a tall Ankita.
Yeah, me neither. So, you know, just her backstory and everything. She's just tiny. She sneaks out of class and she hides in the loo for the entire 1 hour that this class, you know, the duration of the class. She hides in the loo because she doesn't want to get a beating. She doesn't want to sit there drawing. She really doesn't give a shit. And then there's this third student. Let's call this student Meenal, okay? Meenal is a good kid.
Wait, I believe Meenal was a good student. Meenal sounds like a good girl. I think I'd want to be friends with Meenal.
Yeah, Meenal is a good girl. She's, you know, goody two shoes and
she sounds like a little nerd with braces and big glasses. Yeah, is that what she is? Yeah.
Yeah, she is. I mean, Ankita and Meenal could never be friends because Meenal is a little miss know-it-all. Okay. So Meenal sits in class and she religiously brings all her textbooks and notebooks to class and she, you know, brings her art book to class and she draws and she colors within the lines so that she doesn't get a beating. It's not because she thinks that she's going to benefit out of this or anything, but she just thinks everyone's asking me to do this. If I do this, I will escape punishment. Plus, you know, I'm the good kid and I'm going to do this. So she sits down and she colors and she does whatever. So these were basically broadly, you can classify almost all the kids in the class into these three groups.
And Ankita, you mentioned the three types of people you would find in your art class. And yes, Ankita and Shane sound like two annoying little kids who I would never be friends with. But to some extent, Ankita, I believe Meenal, this Meenal kid you speak about, she obviously just did all the work that she was told without questioning it. And I think that's a bad thing. A lot of kids need to question but at least have some curiosity. You know, why do I have to like just sit down and color? Am I learning anything? Or even when they go home and say, actually, I want to practice what I learned, but you don't find that. You just sit down, you do it because you have to. And Ankita, I was in India a couple of years ago. My younger cousin had an art project to do. I think it was an art project he had to do over the summer holidays. So he was asking me to do it. And I said, what are you talking about? This is your project. I mean, how can I even contribute? He said, no, you just need to do some research, whatever, and just fill up some papers. And I told him, I said, I'm not going to do it for you. And he said, oh, but my sister always does it for me. And I said, well, that's obviously the wrong way. I'm not doing it for you. So Ankita, this boy, he went to an art shop, to a random art shop in the market, and he just asked the bhaiya over there. And he said, bhaiya, you know, I need to do this art project. This is what needs to be done. Can you do it for me? And he paid him.
Is this in Delhi? Because I know this. Because
it's in Delhi.
Yes, because when I was in Delhi, every summer vacation, we were given art projects like this. Like, it was like a summer project thing.
It's
and
just
my
a
mom
burden.
Would yeah, and my mom and dad would just groan in frustration because it's basically their summer project more than mine because I was not going to sit down and do anything. They knew it. And they knew that there's no point asking a kid to build a cardboard house. That's the kind of stuff. Or build a doll or stitch something on a doll or, you know, paint it and bring it to class. And all of these kids in my class would just pay people in random shops, these bhaiyas, they would pay them and they would do a really good job. These bhaiyas would actually do a really, really good job. And the thing is, whichever stupid kid actually sat at home and built a doll himself and brought it to class, that doll would be shit in comparison to the professional ones.
And that would that affect their marks or would that affect?
It would. I mean, teachers obviously know that the small kids did not build this really great house out of cardboard or anything, but the teachers would still grade. The shit ones wouldn't get good grades and the really good looking ones would get grades.
So you have this pressure of, okay, so it's your summer holiday. You have the pressure of getting it done. And it's not just even about getting it done. You have to get it done the right way or the best way possible because you have other kids who are paying other people to do it.
And at one point, I remember my mom just went out to the market and bought this wooden doll thing. And she was like, yeah, you know, give it to your teacher.
Just take it.
What the hell do they think? And I took it to class and it had to be cultural because your dog had, I mean,
dog.
Not dog.
Wow.
Not dog again. Your doll.
Oh, good. You need to get your dog. This is getting quite serious.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, my subconscious is coming up all the time. Yeah. So, yeah, this doll had to represent your ethnicity, your culture or something. Some bullshit like that. So my mom went and got this Punjabi doll. And
you're not even Punjabi.
No. And guess what I did? I went to class and this teacher is like, you're not even Punjabi and you brought this doll. And this doll is made out of wood and I'm sure that you didn't carve this thing. And I said, no, my dad did. My dad did the carving. And yes, I am a Punjabi. And the teacher's like, your name is Ankita Narayan. Aren't you like a South Indian or something? Mm-hmm. Aren't you from Madras?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
so you got caught.
First of all,
I told you Ankita wasn't
all,
a good kid.
So, yeah, I didn't get caught because I did not give in. I stood there and I argued. I said I was a Punjabi because I really couldn't be asked to bring another doll to class.
The amount of effort you put in fighting into that, you should have just made your own doll.
Yeah, I know, right? But no, I have better things to do. I had a life at that age.
I'm actually quite curious. What did you do in your summer holidays? I'm sure it's a lot different to what I probably did.
A lot of TV, a lot of playing out in the sun because I used to live in these flat complex thingies.
Yep. And I heard if you're in the military in India, I'm not 100% sure, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I know you live in these really tight security complexes.
Yeah, we lived in one of those. Have you heard of Arjun Vihar?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
That's where we used to live.
Okay.
So it's basically a flat complex, but it's huge. It has just giant playground and so many, 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 many buildings and mm-hmm. flats. So all these kids just come together and play. So we used to basically play all day long.
Mm-hmm.
We had play dates where we would go to other people's houses. And the thing is, none of us really spent a lot of time playing on a computer or anything.
It was a different generation. Yeah.
Actually went out and played, and we celebrated Holi and Diwali and all of those things.
Yeah, I think because when I had my summer holidays, Ankita, I've mentioned before, I was raised in a very sunny country, and my parents have always had this idea that, you know, we need to make sure our kids have a good habit of waking up early and sleeping early. So my mom was very strict with these rules, even in the summer holidays. It's not like I slept in till 11 or 12. And the thing is, my cousins in India always had this idea that I used to do that. You know, they used to think, oh, in Europe, this is what you kids do, which is true because a lot of people do that. But I was never allowed to do that. Still wake up at 7, 8 a.m.
Even I was never allowed to sleep in because my maximum during a holiday would be 8 a.m. And I remember it was not like that in all the homes. It was just in my home. My dad was a little strict about sleeping in. He was like, you need to have a routine and everything in life. And I really resented that when I was younger. But now I wish I had more discipline in my life.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
At one point, I went to a birthday party and these kids are like, oh, you know, it's a summer vacation. We sleep till 11. We sleep till 1 p.m. What time do you wake up? I said, I get to sleep in too. Right? And they were like, what
time?
It's
one of these lies to fit in.
Yeah. And I was like, 8:30. 8:30 was a big deal to me. And they were like, seriously? And they gave me that look, you know, the look you give a loser.
But Ankita, is that kind of look you'd give to Meenal in art class, right?
Yeah, because, you know, she's sitting and drawing. She brought her art book. Of course, she's going to get that look
for me. But when I go to India to visit my cousins, these are not my cousins directly I'm speaking about. These are other family members. So my cousins' cousins, or big family that we have. And I've walked in at around 10, 11 a.m. and I've seen the kids just sleeping and the maids coming in and waking them up. And I'm just thinking, it's really funny because they thought I was the one waking up at midday or 1 p.m. when in fact it was the complete opposite. And I think it's just that idea that families want to start becoming more westernized, more European. They start building these habits in their homes and in these families. Because I know that in my family, for example, that would never happen because my parents have this strict idea of keeping traditions and keeping our values. But I used to wake up really early, but I never resented it, Ankita, because I used to go out and I used to play sports in the early morning and I loved it. I never complained about it. In fact, sometimes I would wake up earlier than my mom. I'd be like, okay, let's go, ready to play basketball. So when I finished playing my sports, I would maybe spend some time by the swimming pool. My dad would take me to the beach. And my mom did give me time to play my, at that time, the Game Boy,
which was years and years ago.
But obviously at the same time, every evening I had to do 1 or 2 hours of my times table or reading or anything like
even
that.
Even during like summer holidays?
Oh, yes, actually during the summer holidays. So let's say I was going into class 4 or class 5. My mom already had the books ready, which is not heard of, which is not heard of in you. Like many people don't do that because they teach everything really well in the school anyway. So I used to go into school September, October, November for those 3-4 months. I was so bored because I'd done everything. I'd done all the exercises. I'd done the comprehension. And my teachers would sometimes say, like, Miral, like, what are you doing at home? Like, I think they was concerned to some extent. Like, why does she know everything? So although I think my parents had balanced it out quite well over the summer, I think it's important to be mentally active as well as physically active. So I think my parents did a great job because it instilled some good qualities in me. Because when I came into university, I knew, okay, if I have an exam 2-3 months ahead, then I can at least start even thinking about it, start revising, start preparing for it. But what I don't think is the right thing to do is spending all your summer just doing all these projects and not even having the chance to enjoy your childhood, really.
Not even doing the projects, like paying someone else to do it for you, and it doesn't even mean anything because the kid who actually spent time doing it doesn't get a good grade because you got it professionally done by someone else.
And it's really bad because, Ankita, when I saw this happening, when I saw my cousin going into the art shop, it's not like he went there by himself. His mother took him. So you see how even your mother took you to get this done.
No, my mother didn't even take me anywhere. My mother bought the thing. And she was like, yeah, take your stupid doll, give it to your stupid teacher and get this over with.
So to some extent, Ankita, you thought that was okay to do. Did you?
I just thought that it was a big pain in the ass. And even back then, I knew that it was not benefiting anyone because my parents would be like, oh, this is not your summer project. This is our summer project. So it was, my parents saw how futile it was. I saw how futile it was. And there were a lot of parents and children who enjoyed this because they knew that they were going to get someone, you know, they were going to pay someone to get it done and they would have the best project in class. And somehow having the best project was appealing to them. Nothing else really mattered. But I just felt that it was a waste of time, waste of effort, which is why we didn't even spend money doing it. We'd just buy some stupid doll and give it give it in. And I'd sit and argue that I'm a Punjabi just so that I can get away with it. So this is what art class was like back in India when I was studying. You know, we were forced to bring this textbook, this art book to class and draw on a blank paper, copy something. You know, I think it set the mood for the rest of the year in the sense that you copy everything, you by heart everything. Most kids in my class would just sit down and by heart their answers, learn things by heart. And it was the same thing with art, right? You're given a template, you just copy and you put it there and you color within the lines. And you don't even use your imagination when it comes to coloring. You use the same colors that are already provided to you. So I'm curious to know, did you have like a compulsory art class or how did your school environment encourage you to be more creative?
Well, you can't force creativity into anybody. To some extent, when people say I'm not creative, it's not entirely true. Everyone has that creative side to their mind, to their brain. Yeah. It's just how
you just have to give them enough space to build that creativity.
I remember really well when I was in primary school. So this was from class 1 to class 3. We had art class, and art class was so much fun because sometimes our teachers would allow our mothers to come in. Ooh. So sometimes my mom would, it was always on a Friday afternoon, I remember, my mom would come in with me after lunch, because we had lunch breaks, and in Gibraltar, because homes are usually quite close to the school because it's a small country, we would go home for lunch and come back to school.
That's cool. That's really cool.
So my mom would have my roti sabji ready, and we'd walk back to school together. And I still remember doing textiles. So I think I can't remember entirely, Ankita, because it was a very long time ago, but I still remember they used to just allow us to do what we wanted to. So they would put a big box of sewing kits, or they'd put a big box of crayons or paint, water paint, oil paints, crayons. I said crayons already, didn't I? So they'd put a big box of textiles, sewing equipment. They'll put a big box of crayons, oil paints, water paints, big canvases. And we could just do whatever we wanted to. And I remember my mom used to come in and she used to teach us how to sew and how to knit. And obviously they weren't obviously the equipment an adult would use, but they were made especially for kids. And I loved it, Ankita. I got into knitting and sewing. And I think there was a point where I was obsessed with making scarves and winter hats with my mom. And there were weeks where I didn't want to knit, so I'd go into the oil painting. But the teachers, the teachers were just shadowing us. So we would have a big room, we'd all sit down and we'd just do whatever. And the teachers were just walking around with their eyes on us. And they'd come up to us and say, oh, this is really nice. Why didn't you try it like this? Why didn't you try it like that? Or that even, the thing is, Ankita, they would question us. They would say, why are you drawing this? Why are you making this? And it makes the kid think that actually I'm drawing this because I think this is really pretty. I can see the trees outside. And it was very interactive in that way.
That makes sense.
And yeah, I mean, in nursery, of course, we had to draw within the circle. We had to draw within the triangle. Pretty much just show us how to hold a coloring pencil. That's all it really was. And then as we moved along, I think in high school, we would actually try and draw portraits of people and they would teach us how to draw that. And I loved it. I really enjoyed it. And if you didn't enjoy it so much, the teachers would just say, okay, you can just do whatever you want, really. You can finish off the homework you have pending for the day after. You don't have to sit down and draw if you don't want to, because they knew that art isn't something that everybody would enjoy. I think there were some art classes where they told us, okay, this is what we're going to do today. If you don't want to do it, it's a sunny day outside. You can go play basketball. You can play.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So if you didn't want to put your energy and creativity into the artwork, you could actually do something else with the energy you had.
That's new. I don't know this. I can't speak for everyone, but I don't know if there's a school in India that does this. I don't know of a school in India that would actually give the kids the freedom to choose whatever they wanted to do, knitting, sewing, oil painting, watercolor, crayon, whatever. Or if you don't want to do any of those things, just go out and play basketball. Mm. No, I've never heard that.
Now I'm just thinking about it. When you see a school from the outside, it looks like a prison cell because kids walk in a herd. They walk in herds. They just run into school. And in India, I know that some people have to sing the national anthem and do the prayers in the morning. Yeah. And it's so military
style. Everyone has to sing the national anthem and the prayers. I think there's a generic prayer every day morning that everyone has to do, and religion-related stuff is different.
So you do all this in the morning, and once school is over, they just run out like crazy.
Yeah,
and I mean, it happens in Europe as well. Don't get me wrong. I mean, not everybody enjoys school so much. But when I went to school, I remember. So we started school at 9 o'clock. We didn't start school so ridiculously early. Actually, it's not. I can't really complain because in Prague they start at 7:30. They start really early. Yeah. So we saw school at 9 o'clock, and then we would have a break at 10:30 to 11:30. So we just like learn for 1 hour and then just take an hour break and we'd play and we'd do whatever. Then we'd learn for another hour. Then it was lunchtime. Then we'd go for an hour and a half, I think we had for lunch.
What?
Come back and then another hour and a half of learning and that's it. Go home. And the thing was, our school also had extracurricular activities, which the school was actually doing. So if I wanted to play basketball, I didn't have to seek around for a basketball club. My mom didn't have to pick me up and drive me to the basketball court. It was all there.
Right.
So my mom or my dad would just leave me in school until I finished all my stuff. And then they'd pick me up at whatever time.
That sounds like a very efficient and good system.
Oh, yeah. So good. The thing is, Ankita, in Gibraltar is such a small country. Everything, all the schools are mainly government schools. I've never experienced a private school. I've never seen one. So I can't really speak much about them. And even though I was a government school, Ankita, yes, the teachers were getting paid by the government. Yes, they're not getting as paid as well as a private teacher would. But a lot of them did actually care about us in a good way, you know? Mm. I remember there was... Ankita, I don't know if you played netball in India. So netball is very popular in the UK, in Gibraltar and Scotland. I'm not sure how popular it is in India. In fact, I'm not sure if sports is popular in India as it would be in our...
Cricket is.
Yeah, cricket is a religion, Ankita.
Cricket is a religion. Yes, even I watch cricket. But netball, is it like volleyball or something?
It's not like volleyball, Ankita, actually. It's like basketball, but you can't dribble the ball. And the court is divided into three thirds. And depending on your position, depending on which third of the court you can stay in. It's a very popular sport in UK and Gibraltar. And one of our teachers was so keen on having me play for the team that she asked me, Mila, can you actually train during these times? And I told her, I said, I can't because I don't have anybody to drive me to the location and back home. So Ankita, she actually drove me there and drove me back home every, I think we had training 3 times a week. So she went out of her way to make sure that, I know this happens in India sometimes, but you can only get these kind of teachers if you're on their good books or if your parents know them or if you have some sort of connection. Because I know that in Gibraltar, there are some teachers who would really go out of their way to make sure that the student is actually making the most of their skills and making the most of what their potential is, whether it's in sports or in art or in singing or whatever. And to some extent, my parents weren't too happy that I was investing so much time in sports.
So that's so sweet, you know, Meenal, that this teacher is putting in so much effort to invest in your sports and your extracurriculars more than your academics. The thing is, in India, we definitely have really good teachers and we have really good people as teachers as well. Given the chance, if you put them in this setting, in a setting like Gibraltar, they would also do the same. They would totally invest in their students and they would maybe drop them off, pick them up, help them. But the thing is, priorities are so, so different back in India. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone's main priority is to study. Study, get good marks.
Just as much pressure on the student to get 99% or do ratta of everything.
Yeah.
Do the teachers have this pressure as well that they have to have the students performing at a certain level? Like, does it affect their reputation?
Oh my God. Yes. In fact, that is what I was going to discuss next, because since we talked about art so much, I was going to go into math and science next. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing with the math and science scenario back in India is that most of the teachers are really talented. They know what they're talking about. They know what they're teaching. Especially in private schools, you can't get employed there unless and until you're really good at what you do.
Yep.
So these teachers, they come in, they know their subjects, they're teaching their students, they have a passion for the subject, but they are constrained by the syllabus and the rules and the system in place, because especially in my school, we used to have this thing called monthly tests. So every month we had tests, which were like unit tests, and we had report cards for them. And if your kid is not performing well, the kid's parents would be called to school. And our teachers had to complete the syllabus and the portions with that monthly test or that term exam or that final exam in mind.
Mm.
And they would say, I wish I had more time to go into more detail, but this is all you need to know in order to pass this exam, and this is how you need to study this. And the main goal is to make sure that every child in the class passes the exam or at least scores well.
So they are teaching kids how to pass exams.
Yeah,
that's what they're doing.
So sometimes even before the monthly test, they would say, oh yeah, you know, there's this other way of solving this problem which might be useful to you, but we can't go into that now because we don't have the time.
Actually, Ankita, now that you mentioned that, sorry to interrupt you in that story, but this fits in really well because I did my A-levels, right? And my A-levels, I did biology, chemistry, physics, and mathematics. Now, in physics in Gibraltar, you have very few people doing it because nobody really goes down that line so much unless they need it for any university degree. Now, a lot of people never chose that physics because they thought it was difficult or they thought it wasn't taught well enough. Now, Ankita, I had a teacher the teacher I had in physics, I think he's just my inspiration and my role model. If I ever want to teach anybody anything, if I ever want to learn how to educate people, even on our podcast when we're talking about things, he always comes to mind. Because Ankita, actually in our physics class, there were only two of us. So there were only two girls and it was this teacher. And both of us coincidentally wanted to get into medicine. So we had to take up these difficult subjects. But Ankita, he would go through the syllabus, but he would go through it. He wouldn't even go through it with a textbook that was provided to us by the school. He went out of his way and he made his own notes and he made his own sort of, he made his own textbook. He made his own textbook with his own notes, explained so beautifully and so wonderfully that I just fell in love with physics. In fact, I mentioned in the previous podcast where when I didn't actually get into medical school, physics was another option for me. And the thing was, Ankita, that other subjects which were taught, like mathematics, biology, I did those subjects. And in those subjects, the teacher would sit down with a textbook and just tell us, okay, this is what you need to learn. This is what you need to learn.
Yeah, this is how you solve this problem. This is what the formula is. And this is the derivation to the formula. Mm-hmm. Study the derivation. It's a 4-mark question.
And the thing is, my physics teacher, yes, there are certain exercises which are given by the exam board, you know, so you can go through them. But he never gave us any of that. He actually gave us something so completely different. And they covered such a big, big variety of things that we needed to know that, Ankita, when I gave my A-level exam for physics, it was so easy. So he did it in such a way where I never felt under, yes, it was difficult while I was doing it, but when I got to the exam, I was so confident. And so he actually had a tactic of teaching us. He said, okay, if I give these kids something more difficult, then when it comes to the exam, it will be easier for them.
So the thing is, Meena, I'm sure that a lot of teachers back in India would also do the same thing if they were given the chance.
Yeah.
Because they are capable. A lot of them are really capable because they know their subjects and they're passionate about teaching, etc. But the thing is, there are these constraints that I was talking about. The syllabus is one of the constraints. The second thing is we have these boards like the CBSE board or the ICSE board. And each of these boards, they release a pattern in which the answer paper needs to be corrected, the kind of answers to expect. So they have to stick to that pattern and they have to teach the kids to derive a formula in a particular way.
Wait, otherwise, can I ask you? So, for example, in mathematics or physics, you will have to solve an equation or a question and you may have five different steps to get to the final answer. Now, if you miss a step and you still get to the answer, do you still lose marks?
If you miss just one step.
Yeah. But you still get to the final answer.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a problem. But if you actually use a different way of deriving that formula that the board is not familiar with. See, this is what happened to Shane with his computer science exam. It was some sort of bubble sort thing that they asked. And because he was so into computers, he already knew how to do it, but he didn't do it in the prescribed syllabus method. There are like 100 ways in which you can arrive at the answer.
He arrived
at the answer. He got the correct answer, but he lost 20 marks because it was not the way they expected the answer to be.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently some of our teachers even spoke to him and said, you know, you shouldn't have done that. You know, you should have done it the way we taught you to do it, because the person on the other side, especially with board exams, your answer sheets get collected and they get sent to Delhi for all you know, all the way from Kerala. And the person sitting over there might not know this way of deriving it, or might just, this person is correcting 100.
But you see, that's a problem, Ankita. I interrupted you again, but you were about to say that people have to mark 100, 200 papers every day. So they would rather just do it methodically, and it's a lot easier for them.
That's the excuse. Yeah.
That's wrong, because
wrong.
You want people to, if people are actually finding, like Shane, if he found his own way to come up with the answer, the teachers should be actually proud of him he actually came up with a new way. But that's not how it is.
Our teachers were probably proud of him because he was a smart student, but at the end of the day, he didn't get his marks. Yeah. The results came out and he didn't get the marks, and someone else got 100 because they stuck to the pattern that was taught to them, which is why mugging up becomes such an important part of our curriculum, because everyone's so scared that someone will not be able to recognize this answer. Might as well just mug up everything and vomit onto the answer paper.
And Ankita, one of my cousins, actually, she wants to come abroad to study. And I think she wanted to do the, I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, if it's GMAT or GMAC exam. One of these exams she wants to do, and they have a maths and an English part. Now, Ankita, when I came into medical school, when I applied to the UK, we had to do entrance exams and we had to do these exams as well. But because our whole life, we've been taught how to be so resourceful and find things on the internet, find books, find past papers online and do all these things, I didn't seek anywhere for help. I was like, I can do this by myself.
Yeah.
Now, my cousin is in Delhi and she's going to classes for this entrance exam.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to separate tuitions for that. And I spoke to her. I said, you're spending money on this. I mean, and the internet has everything and anything, Ankita, these days.
Yep.
Yes, of course, sometimes you need people to explain things to you, especially when it comes to mathematics or, some of the tougher subjects. But to some extent, Ankita, everything is there for you. And people are paying. And I think she's paying out of fear. She's paying that actually, if I pay someone, then there's a possibility I might get a good mark. And that's how people are fed in India, because people are so afraid of not getting 100%, or people are so afraid of being that one person who got 98 and missed the 100 by 2 marks, that they will give whatever amount of money.
Have you heard of IELTS exams in India? So IELTS is basically this English aptitude test that anyone from India, if anyone from India wants to apply to the UK, they have to get a score above, 7? I don't know, because I never took the test. I really don't know about it. So IELTS is the test.
Regardless of what you want to study, you just need to do this exam if you want to come to the UK. Okay.
Yeah, everyone needs to do this, except if you studied in a particular syllabus. syllabus or if you were already like an English lit student or something like that. Because one of my friends who applied to the UK, she didn't have to get an IELTS qualification because she was already an English lit student. And so this is a test where they have a listening part, a speaking part, and a written test. And I used to be an invigilator at these test sites.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I would go and invigilate these tests. I would see the question papers. I even listened to their listening test part and all of that. It's pretty straightforward. You know, if you have basic knowledge of English, of course, you'll be able to pass. It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And to even apply for this test, I think you need to pay like 7,000 to 10,000 rupees.
Actually, now that you mentioned this, I figured out in medical school, you don't need teachers to teach you a lot of things, because I think in my first year, I was very attentive in class. And yeah, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, I was a Duracell bunny, really excited to do everything. But then as I went along, Ankita, I tried to listen in lectures, I tried to listen in these seminars, but ultimately the work came from me. I came home and I learned it myself and I went and I did the exam.
That's what you realize once you go to college, because once you're in school, you're spoon-fed. But in college, you realize that you probably do not need to attend that lecture in order to do well, because you teach yourself. Education is about educating yourself, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're lucky if you have a teacher who's going to give you this amazing, mind-blowing lecture that is just going to change your world and your worldview and your perspective. If that's not happening, then there's no harm in just sitting at home and studying on your own. It's something you learn when you go to college.
Yeah, I think I've met maybe two professors who have thought, actually, this guy teaches really well. I'm going to attend all his lectures and all his seminars. But the rest I've done at home. And I just think back now that we've been so reliant on our teachers and our professors as kids. We don't have enough faith in ourselves that actually we can sit down and learn. That we get so desperate that we're going to pay someone to help us get through to a good medical school. I know so many people who've paid money to get into medical school here. And I'm just like, I found it for free. What are you talking about? But people become so desperate. And especially in India, where you have so much pressure from family, society to get the best grade, to get into the best school. You will do anything you can.
Yeah. And this IELTS coaching thing, it's the craziest notion ever, because you don't need coaching for that. I mean, you can maybe look something up online. It's very straightforward, Meenal. It's just, can you understand this slang? Can you understand this accent?
Yeah.
They have maybe like a British accent. They maybe have an Australian accent. You don't have to recognize what accent it is. You just have to understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
And it'll be like, John bought 5 apples. And the question would be something along the lines of, how many apples did... It's that simple. How many apples did he buy? But it wouldn't be as direct as that. It's just, it's basic. It's straightforward.
So Ankita, if any of our listeners who are listening right now who are thinking of doing this exam, what advice would you give to them?
My advice is this. I've gone through a lot of these question papers, listened to a lot of these listening exam tests. All you need to do is prepare on your own. You will find a lot of material online. You don't need to pay anyone to prepare you for an exam. I'm not saying just walk in there and you'll be just fine, because obviously you're paying. I just heard now that it's not 7,000 to 10,000. It's 11,000 rupees for an IELTS application. So you're paying that money. You don't want to waste it. You don't want to just walk into the examination hall. But if you want to prepare on your own. You really do not want to waste more money on people who will train you to pass this test.
The whole idea really is a desperation to reach excellence.
The point of this episode itself, Meenal, I feel, now that we've arrived at this stage, I feel that it's mostly about how school is the place that shapes this idea in your mind, where you're starting from that art class where you have a blank paper onto which you have to copy the image on the other side. It's all like that. You mug up the answers your teachers provide you and you vomit that onto your answer papers and you do well in your test.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've done well in your test, that means, you're employable now.
And Ankita, we've spoken a lot about education in school and how our teachers teach us. There's also another side to this. I mean, what we are taught at home, what our parents teach us. And yes, education is important to get us through life, to get us through obstacles that we face. It's just quite like some funny things I see on social media, like, I know what's inside a plant cell, but I don't even know how to pay a mortgage. Like, and it's true. You learn like about the cytoplasm, you learn about all these things. And then someone talks to you about mortgage, you're like, what? Someone talks about VAT and tax and you're thinking, what? I don't know anything about any of this. And yes, I mean, school won't teach you about these things. Maybe it's something you'd learn at home or something you'll just learn from experience. But when I came into Prague, I learned a lot from school and I learned a lot from home as well. Because I came into a new environment, my brain was closed in a small box for a long time. And that was because I was told to do things in a certain way. And I think I, at the age of 18, I think I, my parents and my school kind of just produced a parrot, really. That's what I really was. But
that's what we all are.
Yeah. So when I came here, my brain was in a tiny box. Now imagine opening this box. Now my brain has got all this fresh air and all these new things around. And Ankita, it was so overwhelming to see all of this and to try and perceive what's actually happening that I thought the best way would be to just unlearn what I already have and just start from scratch again. For example, my mom would say, you have to pray every morning. So I never started from there. I said, okay, so Milan, if you didn't pray every morning, what would you do? Why do you pray? You know, so I started asking all these questions and going through everything in my head because ultimately, Ankita, I don't want to be someone's parrot. I don't want to be a produce of somebody. You know, I want to be my own individual person. So I know in Gibraltar, my parents had a lot of time with us at home because school wasn't so tough on us. So my dad taught me a lot of things. My mom taught me a lot of things. And in India, I don't know if you have that time. Because you spend so much time in school and then you have tuitions and then you have to study for the exam the next day.
The thing you said about the cytoplasm and I don't know how to pay a mortgage.
Yeah.
I remember I had to write this formal letter to someone requesting something. It was basically this official thing. And my dad was like, yeah, write this letter, you know, write what you need. And I said, I don't know how to write a letter. And believe me, at that point, they were already teaching us the difference between formal letter and personal letter and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. it just does not register that this is what you need to use because the mindset is that, oh, I learned that, but wasn't that to pass that exam?
Yeah.
I mean, if you ask me to write a formal letter in my English composition test, I will write a good formal letter and I will get good marks. But the thought, it never goes to your head that you might want to apply that in real life.
But the thing is, Ankita, they're teaching it at the wrong time. I mean, I learned letters when I was 6 or 7 in school so they would teach us like, okay, the address has to be on this side of the letter. You have to start off with dear sir, madam. But at the age of 8, who the fuck are you going to send a letter to? I mean, you're going to send a letter to the Queen of England. It's ridiculous. We were taught how to make CVs at the age, very young age.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. We were taught, I think, in grade 8. So I was...
No, I don't. I'm pretty sure that never in my 12 years in school was I taught how to make a CV.
The thing is, I've never needed a CV until now, 10 years later, and I actually don't know how to make one. I'm trying to figure out. So the other day, I thought, okay, let's just polish up my CV, and I just didn't know how to do it. I am 23. It's quite shameful, actually. But, you know, they told me in school, but they told me 10 bloody years ago. What am I supposed to do with it then? You know?
And another thing that comes to mind is that the whole simple interest, compound interest thing, which is actually something that you can use in banking. But, it does not come to mind that this is something you use in banking and this is how your interest rates are going to... Nobody even explains that. They just teach you how to solve this problem and just get good marks in your exam. Like simple interest, compound interest. I had no idea what those things even meant. You know, I just knew how to... I still know PTR by 100 or whatever. I still know how to solve that. But... It never made any sense to me that this is what you use when you go to a bank and you calculate your interest or something.
The thing is, Ankita, I think the whole system in school, it's all pretty much with good intention, obviously. You know, they want to instill these skills in our brains. For example, mathematics, they want us to be good at problem solving. With English, they want us to be more knowledgeable. But it's just done in such a way that you don't enjoy it. It's done in such a way that you can't put it in practical terms. So that's the big issue. Now, Ankita, I know that in Europe, there have been a lot of controversies about this. So, Ankita, in some parts of Scandinavia, I know definitely in Finland, the schooling system is quite different because the kids actually do more playing and they have more breaks and they do less writing and less classroom style sort of teaching. And it's been proven that they're actually getting better marks and that as they grow older, that they're producing a lot better results than kids in India, China, who are taught much more rigorously.
Made to mug up their answers so that they can pass some exams, you mean? Or getting beaten up with steel rulers because they forgot to bring their art book to class?
You said steel rulers, and I'm really shocked because you're just a year older than me.
Yeah.
And so this would be pretty much the same time I was in
same
school
time.
As well. Ankita, if I got
it was not just that. There was this, I don't know if he was a vice principal. Ours was a school that was run by a bunch of priests. And there was this particular priest who he was younger than the others. And I remember how all the kids were scared of him. And he would walk into your class if your class is making noise, if the kids are being noisy and they're like talking and the class prefect cannot manage them or something. He would come and he would say, the class prefect, have you collected the names of the students who were making noise? And this prefect would be this kid your same age who would stand in the front of the class and write down the names of the kids who were talking. And he would present, he or she would present that list to this man.
Sounds like something Meenal would do.
Something Meenal would do, yeah. Yeah, Meenal is definitely like prefect material.
Meenal would get Ankita and Shane in trouble all the time.
Yeah, and Ankita was like this big chatterbox, so she was definitely getting into trouble. And this man would just come, and he had this huge cane, okay? And I don't mean to exaggerate, but chances are that cane was longer than I was back when I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
It was this huge, long cane, and he would beat these kids on their palms with the cane. And it was not even a normal beating. It was terrifying. So this beating with a steel ruler and beating with a cane was a common thing back when I was in the 5th or 6th standard.
Actually, Ankita, I still remember when we used to do bad things in school. I don't think I really got... I think the only time I would get in trouble when I used to giggle too much in class, which happened quite a lot. Teacher used to say I was really disruptive. But, I mean, you can't really get in trouble for being happy and bubbly, right? So the teacher would never get me in trouble for that. He would just tell me to be quiet all the time. But we used to get these papers, right? And they were called sanctions. And if you got 10 sanctions, it meant that you would go into detention. And detention was basically half an hour inside a room with a teacher, and it was really chilled out because the kids would just talk and no one really gave a shit about it.
Yeah, the concept of detention was unheard of.
Yeah.
When I watched like High School Musicals and all of those things, and I was like, what is this detention thing? Like, what is this thing everyone's talking about? Because it was unheard of. We had punishments like on the spot. You failed a paper, let me give you a beating.
Yeah.
Like, stand in a line one by one. You forgot to bring your notebook.
So, Ankita, every time someone would get a sanction, nobody cared, because for them it was a piece of paper. And I still remember some of my friends getting a sanction, and I was terrified of getting one, because if I had to go home, so if I took a sanction home, I was quite afraid, because I knew that I would get a good telling off from my parents. But a lot of my friends would just take the paper home and the parents would sign it, and no one really cared. So I know that there were a lot of classes I went to which were quite chaotic. Ankita, you're probably going to wonder what kind of school I went to, but I still remember in my biology class, one girl decided to smoke weed one of the breaks.
What?
Yeah.
Like, how old was she?
I think we must have been 16, 17.
Oh my God. Okay.
And that was the one time when everyone was like, oh shit, like she crossed the line. And I think that's when they called in the police. And they took her to... But that was like the first time where everyone got pretty scared.
Oh.
But before that, it was just... The teachers would just say, be quiet, listen to what I'm saying, Meenal, stop giggling.
Oh God, the only exciting thing that happened in our class was when a girl got her period on a Wednesday, which is when you wear a white and white uniform and a little bit of the, and something would be on her skirt, and all the girls would like surround her and protect her, and there's this protective shield around her, and everyone takes her to the bathroom so that she can wash it off. That was the most exciting thing ever.
Another interesting podcast talking about taboo of periods, because
period,
that's another thing. But Ankita, I know that when I was in class, when I was in school, I was still another teacher, my biology teacher in grade 13. She actually used to make jokes with us. She used to laugh with us. And there were times where we spent the whole class just making jokes, and there were 5 minutes left, and she used to be like, oh crap, we haven't done any work. And we'd be like, no, it's okay, we'll do the next lesson. But we had such a good relationship with her. And that's what school, like, you want to leave school with good memories. You don't want to leave thinking, oh, I got beaten by a steel ruler.
I think I'm the only one from my school who passed out with not great memories, because all these things just stuck in my head. And there were just these warning signs, you know, this red light on inside my head, which would just go, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is so wrong. And all the others were just blind to it. Like, I had a teacher who would walk into class, and have I mentioned that my school used to be a boys' school at one point? And it was only in the late 90s or something, or early 90s, I don't remember, that girls were allowed in, and it became a co-ed institution. So at one point, it used to be a boys' school, and in the early 90s, it became a co-ed institution. So in a class of 40 students, mm-hmm. 8 would be girls and the rest would be boys. That was my class.
Oh.
Yeah, that was how it was. Like, we had 8 girls in one class and like 32 boys.
Wow, the boys had very limited choice in.
Yeah, the boys, poor things, had very limited choice. No, but the thing is, this particular teacher would just walk into class and she would say, good morning, boys. At one point she even said the boys in the previous batch found this problem to be difficult, so I just want to discuss it with you. And the another thing is, the girls are made to sit together, like in a group, so the eight girls would be sitting in one corner of the classroom.
Yeah,
and it's like she doesn't even see us, right? Mm. So she says, good morning, boys, and she says, the boys in the previous batch. And I just thought that was so wrong.
Yeah,
I think that's when the feminist in me was born or something. Uh-huh. I don't know. I felt it was so, so wrong, but nobody else feels that way. Everyone just goes on and on about how school was great and how we made so many memories. This was our second home. And I can't help but think that, God, I cannot imagine this to be a home, a second home, where someone thinks that I'm invisible. That doesn't even
Exactly. That just shows that the teacher just has no idea about her students.
I don't know if she does that consciously or because she must have been there when it used to be a boys' school, or I don't know. I really don't know. I never raised this issue with her. I never spoke to her about this because I couldn't be bothered. But at the same time, it was just like, nope.
Yeah. Actually, Ankita, the other day I was discussing about how we learned English in school, because we were talking about some rap music we were listening to yesterday and we were trying to like analyze the lyrics. And we were just thinking, like, wow, this is actually really intelligent. And the lyrics are so deep. But when we're in school learning about Shakespeare and learning An Inspector Called, Lord of the Flies, and all these books, our teachers used to tell us how to... So we'd never interpreted it. Our teachers interpreted it and they told us what the interpretation was. And they would say, the writer was thinking this way and the writer... When in fact, we never had the chance to actually think, wait, this line, why did he write this? Or why did he create this plot? So we were never given that chance. And I think that creates a big block in your creativity as we...
I picked English literature because I was inspired from the time I was in school to, you know, learn Shakespeare. And I liked all of that. So you would obviously think that the training I had in school was amazing. It was. To a large extent, it really was, because our English teachers were really, really good at their jobs. But the thing is, they also had these constraints. They also had the syllabus to follow and this time constraint, and the school that is putting pressure on them, that they really need to finish the portions on time so that the kids can appear for their model exams or whatever. So the teachers never really gave us the opportunity to deconstruct a text, which would have been ideal. Like, there are poems that we could have deconstructed, Shakespeare, whatever, but we were never given the opportunity to do that because there was no time.
And it's not about, to some extent, not everyone would love English literature, not everyone will love poetry, but I think that when someone reads a poem or when someone reads a few lines, something should spark in their brain and think, you know, that, wow, this is what they're saying. But a lot of the times, because we've just hit that point where we've been spoon-fed, when we read a poem, when we don't appreciate these beautiful things which are in front of us.
Our teachers would literally stay up all night preparing notes for us, and they would come to class, they would explain it, and then they would make us take down these notes. They would dictate it. And we would take these notes down, go home, mug it up, and appear for our exams, which is what most kids did. Like, these notes were like our Bible, whatever notes the teachers dictated in class.
So you'd get the same sort of questions and you'd answer it that specific way.
Yeah, same answers everywhere. All the kids had the same points, like 4 points or 5 points, whatever it is. And once you put in those 5 points, so this is also something that the board decides, right? The CBSE board or the ICSE board or the state board. They send in these points and they say, this is what you need to discuss when it comes to this annotation of Shakespeare. And the teachers give you those points and you study those points, and whether you write it in your own words or you mug up something and you like vomit that onto your answer paper, those 5 points are there.
Well, it was a bit different for us, Ankita. We would analyze a whole book. I still remember we did An Inspector Called. I don't know if you've read. It's a play.
No.
I loved it. Actually, Ankita, if you get some time, read it. It's not a book. It's a play. And I loved it. I read it again and again after I finished my English literature exam. I did An Inspector Called. I did Lord of the Flies. Now, we went through the whole book with the teacher. So we actually read page by page, and after each page or chapter, we would discuss. But it was more of a discussion. It was more of the teacher telling us, okay, this is what the author means, and this is what happens. And then when we went to the exam, we didn't know what questions we were going to get. So we would just use our knowledge that we had learned throughout the year or through rereading the book, and we'd answer the questions. So it wasn't as bad as it was for you. Yeah. But even though we had a bit more freedom to think about it, we still just wrote down what the teacher told us in the final exam.
So what you're telling me, what I'm understanding is that it was interactive to an extent, but at the end of the day, you mostly listened to what your teacher told
because
you.
We knew that would most likely be right. And it was also easier to pass the exam like that.
In our case, it was not very interactive at all. We were hardly ever asked, what do you think of this passage? What do you think is... I'm sure they would have done it if they had time or if they had the resources, but they could not afford to do that. They would just be like, okay, this is the passage. This is what it's about. This is what they explain it. They explain it really well.
Yeah.
And then they dictate the notes and everyone just learns whatever is given to them.
But Ankita, we've spoken about the education systems in India and in Europe. And I know that in Europe, there are some changes which are happening in the education system. Like I mentioned in Finland, and I would assume Scandinavia is probably one of the top countries which would progress quite quickly, and everybody would follow on from that eventually. Nobody knows when.
Speaking of that, okay, sorry, I interrupted you this time. There was this thing that came up, this teacher in the US who said that studies
was
have proven
for pornography.
No.
That happens quite often.
No. This is basically this teacher who said, I'm not going to give my kids any more homework because study after study has proved that homework is not very effective, and I'd rather have them spend that time with their families, you know, have dinner with them or go out to the park or the beach or whatever, but I don't want them to sit at home holed up doing homework. It's not very effective. And it was a huge, you know, movement, and all the parents also came forward and said, this is amazing, you know, kids shouldn't be burdened with homework. And so many changes are coming in. I wish that kind of change would happen in India as well.
Yeah, but Ankita, it could happen in India, but it would take a lot of manpower. Because ultimately, we know who's in control. And ultimately, we know that changes will only happen if it benefits specific people.
Oh, the system's in place if the foundations are pretty strong.
But Ankita, I know a lot of people in India complain about doing Ratta. And I know a lot of people complain that the system isn't so great. But I mean, because I'm not from India, I can't speak for India. But maybe you can tell us, what do you think will bring the change? Or who do you think can bring the change?
The youngsters alone can bring the change by internet revolutions. That's the only way. Like, people need to have more conversations about these things. People need to talk about it. People need to write about it.
Ankita, I think one big problem is that because in India, maybe this is just my opinion, I believe that because in India you're taught in a specific way, in a certain way, you just get on with it because, you know, ultimately you want to get into this medical school or this engineering school, that some people will just sit and think, well, why should I really bother? Because, I mean, it's not going to change much. There's 1 billion people here.
No, honestly, Meenal, if a revolution has to happen, the best way would be if teachers were the ones who came to the forefront and said, enough is enough. Like that teacher in the US who said that I'm not going to give my kids homework. That would be ideal, but chances are they won't come forward and say it because for them, it's a matter of job security.
Yeah,
the reason I said the youngsters can bring about a bigger revolution is that when it comes to the youngsters and the students, it's about rebellion. When it comes to the teachers, it's about job security. They can't really afford to lose their jobs because they went on a strike.
But Ankita, you have, for example, CBSC, these boards, and are they connected to politics in any way?
Oh, wow. We're getting into that.
Just answer in a few sentences. We don't have to go deep, but I'm just curious because... So imagine if someone from one of these boards just stood up and said, actually, you know what? We're not going to mark the exams in this way. We're going to change the structure slightly and just bring about a change. Now, can they do that? Because I know that in the UK, syllabi change every year. You'll see changes in science, in maths every year. Nothing is always stuck. And they do that independently. It's not like they have to go to the Minister of Education to bring about these changes. And is it like that in India?
Not necessarily. So I don't know a lot about this. But what I've heard is that when Congress is in power, Rahul Gandhi is portrayed as this prince, this really powerful politician. And when BJP is in power, you know, the Gandhi family is kind of trashed.
Yeah.
Let's just take history. History that I learned. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole independence struggle and the whole thing, it's all the British are bad. The British are so, so bad. The thieves, they took our Kohinoor, blah. And it's all like our struggle, our patriotism, Gandhi this, Gandhi that, Nehru this, Nehru that. And then you grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And you grow up and you start reading a lot of books and you read up about these things. And when you grow up, you realize that that's not exactly true. You know, you need to do your share of reading to come to that conclusion. But
yeah,
without getting too political, what I would like to say is that the politics and the government and all of that really influences the content
right.
that is presented to the kids.
Specific people write specific books. And I think we all know that. And it's obviously biased in some way or another.
Our history textbooks are basically what some people in power want the youth of our country to grow up believing. Let's look at it this way. During the partition, when we are taught about the partition in India, Muhammad Jinnah is a character who's portrayed in not a very good light, you know, because the partition happened because of him. Now, I'm curious to know what it's like in a history textbook from Pakistan.
Yeah.
I want to know what it was like. What are they taught?
If our listeners have any idea and want to contribute, please let us know.
Yes, because I'm really curious. So if we have any listeners from Pakistan, I would really love to know what Muhammad...
Oh, any listeners from Finland, maybe, who can fit us in your brilliant education system.
Yeah, I'm really curious to know what Muhammad Jinnah is portrayed as and what Mahatma Gandhi is portrayed as in Pakistani history textbooks.
So we can see, Ankita, that to teach the youth of Pakistan, a lot of people are involved here. It's not just coming from one person. And so as I say, Ankita, too many cooks spoil the broth. And I think that's a perfect example of what's happening in our education system. So Ankita, actually, you know, now that I think about it, my education wasn't just about textbooks and it wasn't just about problem solving or aptitude tests. A lot of it came, I think a big part of my life, I can relate to sports. Because doing sports has taught me so many things in terms of my competitive drive, in terms of being disciplined, in terms of even just communication. And it played a big role in my life because, Ankita, when I came into Prague to study medicine, we have so many exams all the time that having that discipline in sports where I had to wake up early or where I had to do that 10-kilometer run, I would do it no matter what, without fail. And I could...
10 kilometers? Seriously?
Yeah, that was my morning session. Then I had the evening session.
Whoa.
So I did that without fail. So when I came here into first year, if someone said we had an exam tomorrow and we had to learn 10 pages, I'd be like, yeah, sure, do it. No problem. But people used to sit down and be like, oh, 10 pages, this is too much for me to do tomorrow. I can't do it. But I never had the attitude because I was like, well, someone told me to do it. I'll just do it. You know,
right.
I have to get it done. And also in terms of communication, when I came here to meet new people, I knew what it was like because I've played competitively abroad. I've moved around with different teams and it was quite easy to communicate and make new friends. So sports played a big role in my life and it taught me a lot of things that school definitely didn't teach me. I think that if I didn't do as much sports as I did when I was back in Gibraltar, I think I would struggle quite a lot here in Prague. And how was it like for you? Did you get an opportunity to do as much sports as maybe I did?
Oh, Mina. Oh, sports. So we were never actively encouraged to participate in sports. I mean, if you had a natural inclination for something, maybe you could go beg for like a basketball and do something with it. I don't know. What I remember was physical training and physical exercise. It was like PE or PT or something, PT classes. So it was a 1 hour or half an hour period once or twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
I think up until your eighth grade, you have PT classes twice a week. And after that, it's once a week, something like that. And what we did was we were asked to go to the playground where this PT instructor would ask us to line up. And we were made to do weird exercises like
mm-hmm.
1 foot forward, 1 foot to the back and your hand to the side. and we finished those exercises with a birdie exercise, which is like birdie, birdie, clap, clap.
It sounds like it sounds like Pantanjali was in your school, like doing all these exercises.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was the favorite. It was everybody's favorite exercise because A, it signified the end of the horrible PT training, whatever that thing was. And
yeah.
B, because you don't really have to move your body because you're standing still and just moving your hands like a bird and clapping it.
But actually, Ankita, it's really strange because we had coaches from the UK coming to train us. They put in so much effort into our sports. And now Gibraltar is a very small country. So we're not well known internationally. But I was a rower as well. So I used to row. I used to play basketball, and we used to go into Spain. We used to go into the UK. And my parents actually said to me, they encouraged me. I remember I used to have to train sometimes at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. before my school started. And even though my mom didn't have to wake up so early, she would wake up for me and prepare my breakfast for me and prepare everything for me, because she was really happy that I was so disciplined in everything.
Okay, now when I say all these things about the birdie birdie clap clap and not being encouraged into sports, yeah. And so after the exercise session, which was like, I have to do the air quote thing for exercise, it was not really exercise. After that, we were just left to our own devices. We could do whatever the hell we wanted to do. So the boys would go and beg and fight for a football, and they would play football, and the girls would just sit in a corner and talk or try to find a badminton racket and try to play something.
Yeah.
That was it, you know, and nobody really encouraged us to do anything more than that. Nobody said it's compulsory to actively engage in a sport. Now, the thing is, when I say all this, it could be outdated because I passed out of school 7 years ago. But I don't know if the sports scenario in schools has changed much, or I don't know if a lot of schools 7 years ago, you know, a lot of my contemporaries also had to go through the same thing, because different schools are different. I'm talking about one school in one tiny city in India.
But Ankita, you know these PT teachers who would come in, did they have a specific qualification, or were they just any random teacher?
No, I think they did.
Yeah.
Because we had this handbook in which everybody's qualifications would be given. I think I remember seeing these PT teachers with qualifications in
because it's a very common thing nowadays for people to qualify as a PE teacher or as a physical education teacher. And Ankita, I remember when I was doing my A-levels, I remember I was struggling a bit with mathematics, and I asked my mom if I can go into tuition for mathematics. And she said, Bamil, if you go into tuition, then you're going to miss your basketball training time. I said, yeah, well, I'll sacrifice basketball. And she said, don't do that. You know, we'll figure out another way. Because she wanted me to do these things because she knew how good it was for my own mindset and my own discipline. Now, in India, I have my cousin, my 13-year-old cousin, who's an amazing badminton player. He's incredibly good. And he's an incredible runner as well. And I know he has a lot of potential, but Ankita, no one has the time to drive to this badminton court because he has math tuition or he has French tuition. And obviously that will take priority because he has to get the best grades.
Yeah, the same thing happened with me. Like, so in terms of physical activity, what most girls did when I was in school, what I remember is most of the girls would take up dance classes somewhere, and they would, you know, learn one kind of dance, and they would participate in school events and stuff. Dance was what physical activity mostly was all about.
For girls,
for
especially.
The girls.
Yeah.
For girls especially. And I used to go to these dance classes as well. And when I was in the eighth grade, because I felt lazy to go to dance classes, I used to kind of enjoy it. I was lazy and I told my parents, I'm in eighth grade, 2 more years to the board exams, you know, I might as well stop dance classes. What if it distracts me from my studies? I just made up this stupid excuse. And my parents were like, okay, if you feel that's the right thing to do, then you can cancel your dance class. And I called up the dance teacher and said, I'm not coming anymore. I'm in eighth grade. I have to study. And that was it. And so the thing I was saying earlier about how what I'm saying right now may be outdated and it was 7 years ago. The thing is, even back then, you were doing all these things. Mm-hmm. You were already participating in sports and you were active.
Yeah.
We are the same generation, but we had these completely different outlooks.
Yeah, completely different. And it's nature versus nurture as well, to some extent.
Yeah.
You know, when I came into Prague, obviously I wasn't involved in basketball and rowing. I left all this behind me, but I still had that drive to compete. I still had that drive to continue, which is why I enjoy running a lot. And every year my aim is to run a half marathon, which I've been doing successfully for the past 4 years. And a lot of people ask me, like, how do you do it and why do you do it? And Ankita, honestly, I think I've been so blessed to be raised in a country where the weather was great. So even in my free time, I'd play sports and I had easy access to everything. And I understand that in big cities like New Delhi, Mumbai, you can't get to places quickly. And I get it. I completely understand. But if it's something, if at a young age, your passion and your hobbies are taken away from you, you just become a robot to some extent. You're just doing things because you have to. And that your childhood should not be like that. Or even your school life shouldn't be like that. Because then you come to university and you believe that these passions and these hobbies were only hobbies. And you don't have that drive to continue. So if anyone who's listening and even if you want to learn an instrument, try your best to, remember, even if you want to learn an instrument, you can always look at YouTube. You know, you don't have to go to a music class. If you want to
I have a friend who taught herself how to play the guitar, and she's really good at it. She, you know, on her Instagram, she puts up these short videos of her playing the guitar mm-hmm. and singing a song. She's gotten so good at it. It was a self-taught thing.
And, you know, I've always said that I'm not interested in art and drawing and paintings. But this summer, I made an active decision to start drawing. And I try every day or every other day to draw. And just to try something new and to try develop new skills. And that idea only came to me because my whole life has been like, oh, I'll try this sport or I'll try that. And I'm so open to trying new things. And when, from a young age, when all that is taken away from you, you lose your drive. You lose that motivation. Even though it's in you somewhere, it's difficult to express it.
Have you tried using one of those adult coloring book things?
No, not at all. sounds like pornography book.
No,
adult coloring book. What are you coloring, Ankita? Tell us.
Oh, there are these really amazing. I think they're called Enchanted Forest and things like that.
Uh huh.
Okay, that sounds so wrong.
Oh my God, Enchanted Forest. Okay. What's behind it, Ankita?
It's basically just coloring books for adults, and you can get special pens to color with. And I really want to try that. I've not been into drawing and stuff, but I think I'd enjoy coloring.
And the thing is, Ankita, when you try these new things, you have to go in with a mentality that you're going to be quite shit to start off with. You
know,
you can't go in thinking, yeah, I'm going to be amazing on the first go. And that's what puts a lot of people off when they try something. When they try to go on a run, they only make it to 1 kilometer, 2 kilometers, and they think it's bad. But you have to start off somewhere.
So on that note, I hope that our listeners in India, especially if you're students or if you have younger brothers and sisters who are still in school, I hope you realize that things are pretty different out in the rest of the world.
So even our listeners outside of India, even if you're in Pakistan or in Bangladesh, Europe, America, Canada, do let us know what you think about our podcast, because we've spoken about two different environments completely. And if you think that there's a specific system in your country which works really well, we would like to know about it.
So if any of our listeners have stories to share with us, please send us an email to mail@desioutsiders.com. You can find us on social media at the Desi Outsiders. Also, we have a special chat channel at chat.desioutsiders.com where you can be a part of a very meaningful conversation.
We've had some great people contribute to some of our ideas. We've spoken about a lot of things which we don't usually hear in our society, you know, like changing education systems or trying out new things. And if there's anything you disagree with, please tell us. I mean, we'd like to hear things that you agree with and disagree with, because we're open to any discussion.
And on that note, I'm Ankita.
And I'm Meenal.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.